You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. The New York Mets found a way to beat the Milwaukee Brewers on Thursday night to get another series victory, thanks in part to some bad defense and base running by the Brewers, if we're going to be completely honest. But the big story out of that game is that Tyler McGill exited with shoulder tightness. We'll learn more about that injury tomorrow, but I'll talk about it a bit today in the first segment while also recapping the game. In the second segment for a Friday Farm Report, we're going to talk about Mark Vientos. Is he more valuable to the Mets this season as a trade chip or as a potential designated hitter? Then we'll close the show today with a series preview of what lies ahead this weekend against the Miami Marlins. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing at JustBaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Now, the early story in this game is that Tyler McGill exited with shoulder discomfort. He got the Mets through the first three innings scoreless, then in the fourth ran into some trouble, and then had to exit with the bases loaded. But let's first talk about the injury before we talk about the game. This is now the second injury of the season for McGill. First one, biceps tendonitis, now shoulder discomfort. As soon as he threw a pitch, he motioned to the dugout, they pulled him. No indication now of what type of injury this is, how long he could be out. They'll do imaging, we'll have a better understanding. We could talk about that, you know, on the show next week when we get more, you know, intel on what's going on here. But I do wonder if any of this goes back to last season. Because Tyler McGill's career high innings pitch going into the year, and this was from 2019, you know, before COVID, he threw 71 and two thirds, all right, in his final season before the minor league shutdown. Comes back, an incredible breakout season last year, but we saw that innings jump go from 71 and two thirds to 130. And for those of you who've been listening since last year, you remember in September, he wasn't very effective, and I was wondering, like, why aren't the Mets shutting this guy down? I don't know if two less starts at the end of last season would have made a big difference if he threw 120 innings instead of 130 innings. I don't know. But I did think coming into this year that this is something to monitor, and now you're seeing a second injury. There's no way of knowing if any of this is carryover, but that is something you have to think about, and I do wonder what his role is when he comes back. It all depends on, you know, how long he's out for. But let's just say McGill isn't ready to come back until after Scherzer's back, maybe even DeGrom's back. I am wondering if this might be what opens the door to Tyler McGill ending up in the bullpen. Because even though there is a level of uncertainty of being in the bullpen as far as when you're going to pitch, and if you have a pitcher dealing with injuries, that's not always the best thing. But you can also protect him a little bit as far as managing his innings this season and have him potentially be a weapon out of the bullpen, where maybe you just make sure he doesn't throw on back-to-back days or things of that nature, but he could still go out once every 3 days and maybe give you two innings and be the bridge from the starter to Edwin Diaz. So that's just something I wanted to throw out there at the beginning of the show today when it comes to McGill. We'll have no idea again what's going to happen next until he gets those MRIs. Now, in that fourth inning, he gave up a leadoff homer to Christian Yelich, got a strikeout, then he gave up two hits and walked a batter to load the bases, threw one pitch, which was a strike, and that was the one that he signaled to the dugout and came out of the game. Chasen Shreve came on and did pretty terrible job at keeping those inherited runners off the board, although I will say, wasn't really bad pitches. I mean, the Brewers just put some good swings on some tough pitches to get a couple of hits, particularly the second one that Shreve gave up there. But overall, you know, an RBI single drove in two, a ground out drove in the other. And so suddenly the Brewers had a 4-1 lead. Now, what do we talk about all the time with this Mets team? When they give up runs, they often bounce back. And in the bottom half of that inning, the Mets were able to get at least one back. Jeff McNeil drew a walk. Louis Guillorme got a two-out hit. That put runners on for Tomas Nido, who's been great with runners in scoring position. It was runners at first and second. He got the runner home, hit a ball into right field. Hunter Renfro came up firing. Because there was not going to be a play home on McNeil, Rowdy Tellez made his one good defensive contribution of the day, pointing towards third base to have Renfro throw the ball there, and they're able to gun down Guillorme. Luckily, McNeil came home before Guillorme was tagged out, and the Mets were able to at least get a 4-2, or at least get one run back and cut that deficit to a 4-2 lead for the Brewers. Now, that hit by Nido made him 8-for-16 in his last opportunities with runners in scoring position. So he's been unbelievable in those spots. Really great to see. In the bottom of the fifth inning, Nick Plummer drew a leadoff walk, and then the first pitch Mark Canha saw was right where he could handle it, right out over the heart of the plate. He didn't miss it. Went to right center, part of the ballpark. We haven't really seen him hit home runs too just yet. His fifth of the year ties the game for the Mets, and their bullpen was great. Shreve, while he gave up all those inherited runners, was able to get out of that one inning, then gave the Mets another scoreless inning after that, or I guess I should say a scoreless inning after that, not necessarily another one. But then Seth Lugo comes on, and he was as good as we've seen all year. His curveball was absolutely filthy. He had four whiffs on the pitch. He went two innings, allowed just one hit, had four strikeouts. Just a great performance by him. Drew Smith came on, gave the Mets a scoreless eighth. He worked around a couple of hits that he allowed, got a strikeout to get through that one. The bottom of the eighth inning, thank you, Rowdy Tellez. You have J.D. Davis gets a leadoff hit. Like we said, we talked about him, the curious case of J.D. Davis, a great episode that I really enjoyed doing earlier this week, doing a deep dive into J.D. And look, as I said on the show, not always going to hit home runs for you, but when you're talking about this current lineup, he's the best option because he keeps the line moving. In this instance, he gets a ground ball base hit up the middle, hits the ball hard, ends up on first base. Louis Guillorme, that hit what could have been a double play ball. It's kind of hit too slow maybe to get him out at first base, but there was certainly a potential there. And Rowdy Tellez airmails the throw. That put JD on third, Guillorme on first. Starling Marte, who still wasn't playing with that wrist injury, goes out as a pinch runner because JD is the DH anyway. So no harm, no foul. Get some speed on third base with the winning run. Good decision by Buck. Tomas Nido strikes out though. So then Nick Plummer comes up. He's been really struggling. I think it was 0 for his last 17 before he stepped into the box. And he hits a ground ball to Tellez. Now, you would have thought Starling Marte with his speed would be running on contact, but he wasn't. So Tellez stares down Marte, tries to make a throw to second. They get the force out, but the throw was a little high. It took Adames off the bag and really limited him from doing anything else. If everything broke right, if Tellez had done it again, if he was able to look back Marte and fire a third to second that was on target, maybe they could have doubled up Plummer at first. Maybe Adames could have gunned down Marte at the plate. But regardless, that indecision or that bad throw that kind of pulled Adames off the bag more than indecision. It was a decisive move by Tellez, but I don't know if it was the right one. And ultimately, Marte is able to come around to score to give the Mets the late lead. And then you talk about the final inning, and again, the Brewers really did help the Mets. You have this play at the plate where Edwin Diaz gives up a pair hit. So he gives up the first one. You have a runner on first base. It's Hunter Renfro. You have this ball that was hit not very well, kind of dunked into right field. Plummer has to try to come on and make the play. Renfro tries to score from first base. It did take a perfect relay to get him, but there was, one out at the time? You can't run into that out at the plate in that spot when you would have been sitting on third base with less than two outs. And sac fly could have theoretically tied the game with Christian Yelich up. So Plummer fields the ball, throws a one hop to Pete Alonso. Not the best of throws from Plummer, but at least he gave Pete a relay he could handle. And he did a great job very quickly firing it home. Tomas Nido, great game by him. Awesome tag there. Very much not like a Wilson Ramos behind the plate in that instance. Someone mentioned Ramos on Twitter, and I thought that that was pretty apropos as to a reasoning behind why the Brewers would possibly send that runner. Maybe they thought somebody else was behind the dish for the Mets, but he just does a great job there, tagging Renfro right in the face, really, and saving the game for the Mets. And then Diaz able to get a big strikeout. And there you go. The Mets once again win a series. Great team effort. Really good job by the bullpen. The Mets just able to survive. Now they're going to have a much more interesting series, I think, against the Marlins, just because it's the first time these two teams are squaring off, and they're going to play the Marlins 11 times in their next 21 games. So it's going to be really fascinating to watch these teams feel each other out, because you never quite know how a team's going to play you, especially in the division, obviously, until they finally square up. So we're going to talk about that in the final segment today. But first, I want to talk about Mark Vientos for a Friday Farm Report. Is he more valuable to this team as a DH this year or as a trade chip? We'll get to that in just a minute. But our next partner has a product that I literally use every single day, which is Athletic Greens, because I've been looking for a way to get more vitamins and nutrients into my diet. And with one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens and a cold cup of water every morning, I'm absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins and minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens that help start my day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, your recovery, your focus, and your aging. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews and is recommended by pro athletes. It costs you less than $3 a day, making it cheaper than your cold brew habit. It's the single best thing you can do for your body in under 60 seconds. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of their immune-supporting vitamin D and five travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/MLB Network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/MLB Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So if we go back to May 1st, Mark Vientos was hitting 164 with a 257 on base percentage and a 311 slugging percentage in AAA Syracuse with only one home run in his first 61 at-bats. Since then, Vientos is hitting 323 with a 400 on base percentage, a 677 slugging percentage, good for an OPS over 1,000. He has 10 home runs in his last 22 games and four in his last four games. Had a three-game home run streak break on Thursday, had a multi-home run game mixed in there. So this is a guy who is absolutely scorching red hot. Now, if you look at his strikeout numbers, that's the one thing that concerns me a bit. On this season, he's striking out in 31.6% of his plate appearances. Now, you say, all right, but has that gone down since he got hot? In fact, it's the opposite. It's gone up a little bit. He's been striking out 33% of the time since May 1st. Not that that is a drastic shift from where he was in the first month of the season when he wasn't hitting at all, but the bottom line is, regardless of whether he was hot or cold, he's been striking out about a third of the time, or at least over 30% of the time. And he's always been a big strikeout guy, but it is a little bit concerning when you have someone striking out this much in AAA. How is that going to translate at the big league level? I absolutely love Mark Vientos as a prospect. Anyone who's been listening to this show for a while knows that, because I talked about him a ton this offseason. I wanted him to get a shot to break camp with the team. And obviously, considering how slow of a start he had, that was not a great take. But that's how much I've been invested in his development, how much I believe that he will reach that 40 home run potential in the big league someday. And since the start of the 2021 season, he has 36 bombs in 125 games. I mean, his power is legit. There was a home run he hit the other day where he didn't even really hit the ball well. I mean, completely got it off the end of the bat, and it was a short porch, mind you, but he hit one right down the right field line, opposite field, and it somehow went out. It's ridiculous the type of pop that he has and the way he's able to leverage that pop now, because he is part of the age of new hitters that is launching baseballs, unlike your incumbent DH and JD Davis. But at the same time, is Mark Vientos going to come up and give you a better professional at bat than JD Davis this season? That's the part of this that has me a little bit, just unsure of which direction the Mets should go here. Because in one respect, I do think that the best version of this Mets team, if you're not talking about any external additions by season's end, would include Mark Vientos as the DH, because I really believe that he is way more of a game changer than a JD Davis or even an Eduardo Escobar for that matter. So I look at the potential and it's there, but you're talking about a ceiling compared to a floor with a team that has World Series aspirations. And I don't know if that's too much pressure to put on this kid. So the other school of thought is, all right, let's keep him in AAA. Now, I don't expect Vientos up until the trade deadline because you don't want to mess with that value. If he's comfortable, let him stay there. Let him stay hot. Let him pile up the home runs. Let him completely enhance his stat line. So he's got such a gaudy set of numbers. By the time you get to the deadline, his value will be at an all-time high. As soon as you call him up, and unless the Mets need to with injuries, it's like driving a new car off the lot. You just don't know. I mean, the difference is, unlike a new car driven off the lot, that player, that prospect could appreciate in value if they perform. But if they don't perform, suddenly what was once a blue chip prospect doesn't have quite the same value. So I imagine he's going to be in AAA at least until the deadline. But once you're there, he could be the piece that gets you whatever you need. He could be the casualty that you need to give up to get the big lockdown reliever, to get the DH that you might want, to get Wilson Contreras. There's a lot of ways they could leverage Mark Vientos. And I think the more likely scenario this year is probably through a trade. But is that something I want to see happen as someone who's been such a proponent of Mark Vientos and his promise? No. I think if I had my druthers, I would just either A, let him get a shot at the DH spot. And if he thrives, you know, give him that runway to really steal the job, give him plenty of at-bats, when you do call him up. Or B, keep him stashed away for a year. And it's going to suck for Mark Vientos because he's probably MLB ready right now. But that's part of the problem when you play for a good team. I would like Mark Vientos to be in the mix in 2023. I think you're getting to a point that even if JD Davis is the answer for the remainder of this season, I still find it hard to believe that they're going to go into spring training next year with JD Davis and Dominic Smith on the 40. I think they're going to make some moves and clear that up. Now, I probably said that this offseason. At least I thought one of them would be gone. And here both of them are. So we don't really know what's going to happen there. But I look at the future and I really hope that Mark Vientos is part of it for this Mets team. But I understand that you got to give to get. And at the trade deadline, he could be that piece that gets you what you need. So I think that is the most likely scenario if you're talking about is he going to contribute to the Mets this season. The way I think he contributes most likely is through the trade market. But I hope it's getting a chance and I hope he runs with that chance and takes this job and grabs it because he could have it for the next 5 or 6 years. Anyway, we're going to preview what lies ahead next here as the Mets play the Marlins for the first time. Again, 11 games of their next 21 against the Fish. We're going to go through how their season has gone and what to expect this weekend. But betonline.net is your number one source for all of your betting stats and sports info. Find the latest sports developments, news, and odds, including this year's NHL Finals, Major League Baseball, and of course, all the latest fighting news from MMA and UFC to boxing. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So you look at the breakdown of the Marlins season so far this year. They got off to a pretty good start in April, went 12-8. Then they were 7-19 in May. Since the calendar turned to June, they're 9-6. So you put it all together. They are 28-33. I believe that probably makes them 12 games back of the New York Mets. Yep, 12 games back. After that win today, the Mets were able to extend their division lead to 4.5 over the Braves and 8.5 over the Phillies. But you look at this Marlins team, and offensively, you say, all right, that's the problem with this team. They're not a good offensive ball club. Yet, you look at the numbers for the year, and shockingly, they're 14th and 15th, respectively, in team OPS and in runs scored. So they've had a middle-of-the-road offense. Maybe that's just a couple of games where they score a bunch of runs. And if you're watching them day in and day out, I know some Marlins fans certainly that would tell me that the offense is way worse than that. But it is kind of interesting to see that the net result of all of it has actually been somewhere in the middle. You look at the individual hitters. You got Garrett Cooper having a great season, someone that has always been good but has never been healthy. And this year he's been healthy. 311 average, 382 on base, 461 slugging. Not a lot of home runs, only four, but 15 doubles, 28 RBIs, and 843 OPS to lead the team. Jazz Chisholm has the second best OPS at 836, 246 hitter with a 301 on base, but the slugging will catch your attention at 535, 13 home runs for the slender second baseman with 41 RBIs and 10 stolen bases. Then you got John Birdie leading the team with 14 steals, Mets killer if you've ever known one. A 279 hitter this year, 385 on base, 404 slugging. Currently playing a lot of third base with Brian Anderson and Joey Wendell, both out. So he has been a menace, and I'm sure he'll be a menace this weekend. The other guy you got to talk about with this offense, there are two guys really, is Jorge Soler and Jesus Aguilar, kind of all or nothing hitters. Soler has a 744 OPS, but 12 home runs. Aguilar has a 728 OPS with 9 home runs. Also, I guess another boomer bust type guy is Jesus Sanchez, who's been getting a lot of the playing time out in center field. He has 8 homers, but an OPS under 700 at 685. The defense is atrocious for this Marlins team in the outfield. And I think that really does hurt them. Maybe not quite as much as it does in Philly, but certainly along the same lines. Now you look at their rotation. Unbelievable. Marlins starters this year have a 3.50 ERA, seventh best in baseball. Their bullpen, on the other end of the spectrum, 4.41 ERA, eighth worst in baseball. And that leads to a lot of blown saves. They have 10 on the year. Bullpen has really hurt them. You look at the pitching matchups. Pablo Lopez is day-to-day with a wrist injury. I was supposed to start on Wednesday, could potentially start on Friday if everything ends up right on that. Who knows? Right now, they don't have a starter announced, I imagine, because they're maybe waiting to see what happens with Lopez. He has a 2.30 ERA and 12 starts. There's also no starter announced for either team on Monday. So maybe if he's still not feeling good, they call up a spot starter or someone comes out of their bullpen, and maybe they save Lopez for the final game of this series, which would mean you have to close out the series going up against not only Sandy Alcantara, who we're going to talk about in a minute, but then Pablo Lopez, two pitchers who are probably all-stars this season. Now, Carlos Carrasco will start the first game of the series. He's a 3.93 ERA on the year. He has four starts this year where he's given up four or more earned runs. He's coming off one of them. But here's the interesting thing. He has given up two earned runs or less in his other eight starts, and he's always been good in the bounce-back performance from the bad one. Gave up eight runs to the Cardinals on April 27th. His next start out, he goes eight scoreless against the Braves in that doubleheader. Then he gives up four against Seattle on May 15th. Gave up one in his following start in Colorado, or against Colorado. I don't remember where that series was played. I think it was in Colorado. Then gives up five against the Phillies on May 27th. Next time out, goes five scoreless. So now he just gave up five runs against the Angels. So you would figure you're going to get a much better performance from Carlos Carrasco this time, particularly against a Marlins lineup that can struggle. On game two, you got lefty Braxton Garrett going up against Taijuan Walker. Garrett, career 4.97 ERA. He's had a couple of cameos the last few years in 2020 and 2021. I still don't have a ton of innings pitched at the big league level. This year, he's made two starts, has a 4.0 ERA, and Walker at 3.08, coming off a pretty good outing. You got Sandy Alcantara versus Chris Bassitt. That is the pitching matchup of the series. Alcantara has been absolutely unbelievable. He is by far running away with the signing right now, in my opinion. I actually wrote an article for Just Baseball. It was my way too early Cy Young winners. Also did way too early MVP finalist, really. I gave you a top three in each league for each award, and Alcantara was my winner right now in the National League. You look at what he's done since May 11th. The guy's just been unbelievable. I mean, a whole different planet. He's looked like Jacob DeGrom. I mean, he's throwing 101 with his sinker at the bottom of the zone. No one can touch it. He pitches to contact still. He goes deep into games. That's the crazy thing. 91 and a third on this season for Alcantara. 9 more than Miles Michaelis for the Cardinals. To have a 9-inning innings lead at this stage of the season is crazy. Over his last 7 starts, Alcantara has a 0.81 ERA, has given up only 5 earned runs, but he has averaged 7.95 innings per start. So he's averaging basically 8 innings a start. It's crazy. And he's not even winning a lot of these games. The Marlins are like the Mets with DeGrom. They can't hit for him. He carried a scoreless outing through 9. Should have been a complete game shutout. His team couldn't score for him. So I think the one hope is that that type of bad luck carries over. And we do know that Chris Bassitt can match zeros with anyone when he's right. They'll play again on Monday. We'll talk about that show or that game on Monday's show. We'll see where the series stands at that point. You hope that the Mets have at least taken 2. Be great to take the first 2 games of this series. You know that with Braxton Garrett and whatever starter they call on Friday night, the Mets should have every opportunity to score a lot of runs on some inexperienced starting pitchers. It's not like the Marlins bullpen's that great either. So if you can get this series off on the right foot and win the first 2 games, you'll be sitting pretty regardless of what Alcantara does on Sunday, knowing that you could win the series on Monday. Anyway, that's going to be all for the show today, for the show this week. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB. And if you want more of me, I'm there today. I did a show with Sully late on Thursday night that's already live now as I'm recording, but you can check that out. Or I think you'll have another episode for you later on in the day. You can follow Locked On MLB wherever you get podcasts.